Hi, and welcome to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. The program today is about the sex offender registry in the District of Columbia and some of the larger issues about sex offender registries throughout the country. With us today, we have Stephanie Gray. She is a specialist with the Sex Offender Registry for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And we have Sergeant Robert Patazzeri. He is a sergeant and a unit supervisor for the Sex Offender Unit with the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C. And to Stephanie and to Bob, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, did I get your name right, Bob?
Yes, you did.
All right, good. It's Patazzeri. Okay, I practiced that before the program. We're talking about sex offender registries. Now, it's interesting that virtually every state in the United States has a sex offender registry. There is a national sex offender registry as well, maintained by the U.S. Department of Justice. And sex offender registries throughout the country, and I'll speak from my experience in the state of Maryland, where I was director of public relations for the Maryland Department of Public Safety. Safety and Correctional Services for 14 years, we had an enormous amount of interest and enormous demand from citizens for this information. Citizens obviously wanted information about sex offender registries. It has a certain amount of controversy in terms of its efficacy. What does it work? Does it not work? But nevertheless, citizens want this information, and citizens continue to want this information today. When we put up the sex offender registry on the Maryland website, it almost brought down the website itself. It was that popular. So to discuss the circumstances in Washington, D.C., again, we have Stephanie with the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency and Bob, who is the unit supervisor for the Metropolitan Police Department. Bob, the first question goes to you. Now, the Metropolitan Police Department is the police department for Washington, D.C., and you have about five people in your unit, a couple civilians, and you're in charge of promoting or making public the registry. And also to check on offenders, correct?
That's correct. You know, there's two main ways we try to get the information out there. We do have a website that we maintain, which has information on certain classes of offenders. Plus, we have books at all of our police precincts that the community can come view there. And also, I just want to say this. The registry, it's there for the community so they can look at it and they can take reasonable precautions. And it's also there for the police officers so the officers learn who the convicted sex offenders are on their beats. And that's the kind of way we have it set up here in the city.
Now, that's one of the things about the relationship between the Court Services and an Offender Supervision Agency, which is essentially the Parole and Probation Agency for Washington, D.C., even though we're a federal agency, and the Metropolitan Police Department. We have a good working relationship. We exchange a ton of information all the time. And the sex offender registry, part of it is important for the police officers to know who is out there, who we're supervising, who we're not supervising, because my understanding is half the list are under active supervision by my agency, again, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, and half are not. So it's important that this information is being exchanged between the two agencies, correct?
Oh, no doubt. And everything starts with CSOSA or Court Services. They're the actual ones that do the registration of the offenders, and everything starts with them. They get the information. They verify the information, so we make sure that the information we're putting out there is correct, and it all starts with Court Services.
Okay, so you do the website, which is essentially the community notification, correct?
Yeah, that's one of the main means we use to get the information out, because you can get out there quickly. We do have the books in the districts, which we only update once a month, but again, the information on the website, once we get the information from Court Services, and it's a computer program that we share, once they've entered it, we get it, we verify it, and then we can post it on our website.
Okay, and what is the website address?
The website is at www.mpdc.dc.gov.
Okay, one more time,
www.mpdc.dc.gov.
Okay, cool. And Stephanie, we're going to go over to you now, because the registry itself is, and this is interesting, in Maryland, my old agency, we had pretty much exclusive responsibility for the registry. In this case, we're sharing responsibility. We, as a Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, as the good sergeant said, we populate the information. We verify who they are, and we put the information into the website, and then MPD promotes the website, correct?
That is correct.
Now, what that's difficult in terms of identifying offenders, being sure we have the right names, being sure we have the right addresses, being sure that we have the right crimes. That's an awesome task.
Yes. Once we identify him by his identification, he'll have an ID card, and then we'll verify and get the information that he was convicted of from the U.S. courts or the D.C. courts. That has the signed judge's name and date that he was sentenced, so that we have the accurate information on what we're registering that offender on.
Mm-hmm. And so is there ever any question about the offender's identity?
Yes, it is, because a lot of them will go by a alias name, and we'll do a comparison of fingerprints,
right,
to get it matched to that particular person.
And that's one of the points that I wanted to make, because that's crucial in my criminal justice career. Which is 38 years. Boy, have I seen a lot of people with aliases. I mean, I've run rap sheets in the past with 20 aliases, 15 dates of birth.
Yes.
And the whole idea, as far as, you know, to the listening public, is that they were able in the past to fool the system, because you could be arrested and come in and be booked and give a false name, give a false date of birth. And we within the law enforcement community would release that person thinking that we had John Doe, when the guy's real name is Tim Smith and he's wanted for a homicide from Nebraska. I mean, that's an extreme example. But that's so we now match them via fingerprints, and that's a positive identification. So we know who that person is. We know their aliases. We know who they are. We know their backgrounds and their criminal histories.
Yes.
And we have, what, three categories in the District of Columbia that of offenders that we use?
Yes, we have three classification levels. Class A is registered for every 90 days, and that's a lifetime registration. They are on the public website.
All right, now let me stop you there. Every 90 days, they have to come in to the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency and do what?
They're updating their registration requirement. They're updating their address, their work information. If they have a car, their driver's license, all the information has to be updated with us every 90 days.
And so they have to bring in an array of original documents to prove this?
Yes. We ask for a copy of a lease. If they're working, we'll make a copy of the pay stub, and we also make copies of their driver's license.
Okay, so we have a fairly complete dossier in terms of who they are, and they're positively identified through their fingerprints. Now, every 90 days, do they really do that? Do they really come in every 90 days and register?
The most part, yes. The problem we have on some are our homeless offenders,
right,
or offenders who are in shelters.
Right.
And a lot of times, either they don't get the mail, or they just overlook it because they see that it's a certified letter from somewhere, and they're like, oh my gosh, who's sending me a certified letter?
So what do we do when we can't track that person down?
At that time, if they're not in the office by a due date, we give them a due date.
Right.
A notice goes up to Sergeant Panzeri and his staff to go out and do the search.
All right. And I'll suggest to most of the listeners that level of scrutiny is probably the exception. That's good, because my experience with the National Sex Offender Registry and the folks over the Department of Justice, most jurisdictions in the country are not doing that. That's just my observation. You guys don't have to comment on it. I'll take responsibility for that observation. All right. So we have so the level one offender, that's what we're calling
him? We're calling him a Class A offender.
Okay, Class A offender. Now he is probably a fairly serious person, committed a fairly serious crime for that person to have to come in every 90 days.
Yes, that's our high risk.
Okay. And ordinarily, what are they convicted of?
They can be convicted of, as far as a rape, it can be child abuse against a person under 12.
Okay. So these are the fairly serious offenders.
Yes.
And how many offenders do we have on the registry?
About 600 plus.
Okay, 600, about 600 offenders. So how many, just give a percentage off the top of your head, would be the Class A's?
Well, I think currently we have around 671 offenders that are out in the community. And out of that number, I believe it's about 330 are Class A's.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I'm surprised that it's that many. All right. Yeah. So 330 out of, let's just say 700, to round it off. 330 out of 700, that's a heck of a lot. That surprises me in terms of that class of an offender.
Well, it is a lot. And
But it's a big responsibility in terms of, you know, I was expecting you to tell me that it's, you know, 30, 40, 50. Keeping up with all these guys is tough. And I'm now that I'm heartened as a citizen, now that, you know, this level of cooperation that the two agencies have. All right. So then second category, Stephanie, we'll go back to you. The second category is what?
It's class B.
And who are the class Bs?
And class Bs are required to register once a year for 10 years or the life of their probational parole.
Okay, if as long as they got to do 10 years, or for the amount of time they're on probation, or the amount of time that they're on parole.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm assuming that the class Bs are, you know, less than predatory offenders. I'm assuming, and tell me if I'm wrong, that class As are the really predatory, hardcore folks, and the class Bs are less than that.
Yeah, you can say that, but some of our class Bs are, I mean, they're high risk as well.
Okay, I accept that. And you know, you could be, for the listening public, you could be charged with possession of drugs and be high risk. You could be charged with a higher crime, but not be such a high risk because you're cooperating, you're in treatment, everything's going fine. So
exactly.
It's not just the crime, it's what's happening in that person's life at the same time.
Yes.
Right? In terms of whether the risk level of that person.
Yes.
Okay. But we establish, I would imagine, class A's and class B's based upon a certain criminal criteria, correct? In terms of crimes that you're convicted of?
Yeah, that's correct. Let me just chime in here for 1 second here.
Go ahead.
Again, we do have the three classes of offenders. Class A's, which Ms. Gray said are our lifetime registrants, and the law requires a verification information every 90 days. Then Class B's, which is a 10-year registration period, and Class C's, which is also a 10-year registration period. Now, Class B's, the age of the victim, a lot of these, the laws, when they were convicted, the categories, that determines what their class is going to be, either A, B, or C. So a Class A offender, for the most part, that's the most serious crimes, the rapes, the forcible sodomies,
right.
Things of that nature.
Understood.
And where the age of the victim was under 12, it could be a first or second degree child offense, and
right.
The age of the victim was under 12.
Right.
For Bs, the victim is between the age of 12 and 18.
Okay.
And for Cs, the victim was over 18.
Okay.
Now, I do want to stress here that court services or MPD, we have done no type of risk assessment whatsoever on any of these offenders.
Right.
We can't tell you if the Class A offender is more likely to reoffend versus the Class C offender.
Right. But I guess, and stop me if I'm wrong, 50% approximately, I've been told 50% of the approximately 700 offenders that we have on the registry are under the active supervision of Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And there within that, we do our own classifications in terms of risk levels. I guess that sometimes I'm mixing Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency and what we do with the Sex Offender Registry, but half of them are under active supervision, so I think that's what I was referring to.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so we have Class A, Class B, Class Cs. The Class A's and B's are on the registry, correct? They're on the Sex Offender Registry.
All three classes are on the Sex Offender Registry.
Okay.
Now, the only difference is a Class C offender, we don't post on our website.
We don't post them on the website. But these are in books available at any Metropolitan Police Department, district station.
For Class C offenders, you'd have to visit one of the books.
Okay.
One of the book locations. And there's about 17 copies of the books in various police facilities throughout the city.
Okay, so anybody who wants access to that information can go to that.
Can go to the books.
Okay. Right. By the way, in terms of a piece of backup, I think it was the Weatherling Act. There is national legislation that really does suggest. I don't think they can force us, but really they really want the states and the district and the territories to have sex offender registries. I think there is some sort of 10% reduction in funds. So this is a national movement as well, not from the standpoint of legislation, national legislation. From this, I think it's the Weatherly Act. And the Sex Offender Registry. So once again, this is something that's happening throughout the country, but the different states will do it differently. In Maryland, we put everybody on the Sex Offender Registry. In the district, the Class A's and the Class B's, what I'm going to refer to as really serious offenders, are on the Sex Offender Registry, right? Somewhere in that ballpark?
Somewhere in that ballpark. Like again, I do want to stress that no risk assessment right. is done whatsoever.
I hear you, and I appreciate you correcting me. Okay, so people come to the registry, the sex offender registry, and one of the things that we were really concerned about in Maryland, and I think the same concern happens, and Bob, this question goes to you, is that we mandate that nobody, absolutely nobody, take any illegal action whatsoever towards that offender. And in the Maryland registry and in the district, I think there's a page that basically says that, correct?
That's correct. I mean, anytime you put an information out to the public and you're posting it on the website, there is a potential there for abuse. And we try to stress to everybody that this information we put out there that we presume is going to be used lawfully to promote public safety. Now, we don't force it on anybody. I mean, you know, some people might not even want to know if the person they live in next door is a convicted sex offender, but we put the information out there, and we haven't had many issues or many problems with the offenders mm-hmm. being threatened or intimidated just based solely on the fact that they're on the registry.
But this is information that individuals can use. My wife is vice president of PTA, and they discuss this endlessly, that they, you know, the sex offender registry is up, it's yeah. running, everybody look at it. You know, anytime you are thinking about employing somebody as a babysitter or you know, somebody that's going to coach your little league team, you know, the registry is there for you to take a look at it. And to them, it was a very big deal. I mean, this is something, this is the information that they truly wanted is the bottom line.
Yeah, and it is. It's there. I mean, we encourage all of our citizens to use the registry. I mean, I would hope they'd want to know the people in the community who are on the registry and if they live in the same block of any of the people. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just it helps in a couple ways. No, they can be another set of eyes and ears out there in the community right. to let us know if something doesn't look right. You know what, and we do get calls from time to time about, you know, people who know that this offender's not currently living at address. I know Miss Grace said earlier that the Class A offenders come in every 90 days, and right. the Class Bs and Cs once a year. And I don't want to say it's an honor system because it's a little bit more than an honor system. But what's to prevent the guy coming in, say he's a Class A, he comes in today, it's time to report, and then tomorrow he moves.
Right.
But we're not necessarily going to be looking for that guy unless something draws our attention to him.
And that's one of the things that everybody has got to deal with every registry in the country, not just the District of Columbia. There's no way of guaranteeing 100% accuracy 100% of the times. I'll take the emphasis off of the sex offender registry and put it on my own agency, and that is that offenders move for God knows what reasons all the time. And an offender could have a legally established resident with his mother. Mother gets really ticked off at him and throws him out.
Right.
So suddenly he's in the air. Now, where he goes, I mean, he's legally obligated to report back into us and tell us that he is now living with his cousin or what his set of circumstances are. That's one of the reasons why we and the Metropolitan Police Department jointly, something called accountability chores, go to that house right. of that offender, knock on his door, unannounced in many cases, and to verify his residency. And that's one of, again, the beauties of this partnership between the Metropolitan Police Department and the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. So even with my own agency, there is difficulty following up on, and every parole and probation agency in the country has this, and every sex offender registry in the country has this, a certain percentage of the addresses and a certain percentage of the information is going to be inaccurate. And we need citizens to come back to us and to say, you know, this guy is no longer there. You need to know this so we can launch an investigation.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's no way that you know, we're almost up to 700 offenders now in the community. There's no way we can watch 700 people 24 hours a day.
Right.
But by putting the information out there, hopefully the community, you know, can help be our eyes and ears.
All right. Stephanie, we're going to close the program pretty much with you. Now, again, you have these offenders. They come in all. Oh, by the way, the Class C offenders, they have to report in once again every year?
Yeah, they come in once a year, and theirs is also for 10 years or the life of their supervision.
Okay. And you know, that's amazing. How many? You have to be Grand Central Station for sex offenders in the District of Columbia.
Yes.
You know, a lot of these people, I would imagine, on a fairly regular basis. You know who they are. You know their backgrounds. You know their circumstances.
Yes. Yes, we do.
And that's the important thing, is if you find anything that's out of line, any suspicions, you give that information over to Bob.
Yes, we do.
Okay, and that's an important part of the partnership. Is there anything else that you guys do? You basically verify the information that they provide you and register them, and if there are inaccuracies on the list, it goes over to the Metropolitan Police Department. Is there anything else the court services? Now, I know for our offenders on supervision, you get information from our community supervision officers, known elsewhere as parole and probation agents. You get that information that this person's not where he's supposed to be, or we believe this person is engaged in this sort of behavior, but principally where the person is, to update the registry information, correct?
Right, that is correct.
Okay, so it's a partnership. If the guy's under supervision by the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, if he's on parole and probation, then we have a pretty decent amount of contact. The information flows through you as the registry specialist.
Yes.
To record all this information, and then the Metropolitan Police Department has the responsibility of putting this information on the website and to disseminate the information from time to time in ways that is suitable and protects public safety and tracks down discrepancies and goes after people who are not doing what they should be doing, correct?
That's correct.
Go ahead, please.
The only thing before we finish up here, I wanted to make sure we talk about is that National Sex Offender Registry.
Go ahead, please.
Because that's a great tool for the community, especially here in the District of Columbia, where we have Maryland and Virginia borders are so close. The District of Columbia is part of that National Registry. People can go there. And one thing about a National Registry is you can go and you can run a zip code.
Right.
If you want to check a zip code, or you can check by name.
Okay.
So by all the states feeding into that National Registry, that is a big help. Because, like, again, here in the city where we border other states so closely, and they are transit.
That's a wonderful point, because that's what I did in the Maryland Registry. I added Pennsylvania, Delaware, Virginia, West Virginia, and the district's registry links to the Maryland Registry just for that reason.
Yeah. On our website, you'll see not only a link to the National Registry, but links to the surrounding state registries.
That is great. That is a great idea. All right, Stephanie Graves, Sex Offender Registry Specialist, and Sergeant Robert Panizzeri, the Unit Supervisor for the Sex Offender Registry Unit. Thank you. Bob, one more time, the web address of the Sex Offender Registry is?
It's www.mpdc.dc.gov. And can I finish by saying one little thing here?
Oh, sure.
We want to be careful here that we don't give a false sense of security to the community either. Now, the ones on our website are the ones that are registered with court service. These are the offenders we know about. The ones we got to be particularly careful about are the ones we haven't been caught yet or we don't know about. And we do offer information on our website on tips that you can take
and
to protect yourself.
And thank God you brought that up, because when we were deciding what was the primary message with the Maryland Registry, we decided that the primary message was going to be exactly that most sex offenders who are in our community are not on that registry, because most sex offenders haven't, the crimes have not been reported, because there, as you well know, there's an outrageous amount of these sort of crimes that are not reported to law enforcement. So there's a good number of people, probably the majority of what we call sex offenders, who are not, I'm so happy you brought that up, who are not registered. And it is what I said when we produced the Maryland Registry, is that this is an opportunity for parents to have age-appropriate conversations with their children about what is right and what is not right, what other people have, what other people can do and cannot do, and if that information, if that is in any way, shape, or form, if that child feels uncomfortable with that contact, could be verbal, could be physical, could be just the slightest of touches, to come to the parents and talk to the parents about that, to establish that sort of a relationship. And that's what's going to prevent a lot of child abuse. And the second thing is that let's just say the majority of sexual child abuse, or child abuse in general, sexual child abuse is by somebody who the child knows.
That's correct. And the statistics are pretty high. I want to say it's almost 90%, or it might even be a little bit higher, where on the child sexual abuse cases where the perpetrator and the victim know one another.
Yep.
Thank God these aren't stranger crimes. This is not somebody jumping out behind the bushes,
right,
in the vast majority of them.
Right. So, and that's what parents need to know. Parents need, and I really am very appreciative that you brought that up. I was so focused on the mechanics of the registry that I completely forgot the larger issue of what we're trying to accomplish here. But it is, it really is extraordinarily important that parents understand and that children understand in age-appropriate conversations. I can't stress that enough. Age-appropriate conversations that the majority of people who victimize their children, they may know that person. The child certainly knows that person. And that becomes a key issue. So the registry is there as a public information tool, but as Bob, as you said, it is extraordinarily important that people not get a false sense of security.
That's right.
Thank you very much for bringing it up. All right, we're going to close again with Stephanie Gray, sex offender registry specialist, and Sergeant Robert Panizzeri. He's the unit supervisor for the sex offender registry unit, and we gave out the website address for the sex offender registry. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Watch for us next time as we explore another important issue within the criminal justice system. Our website is www.csosa.gov, www.csosa.gov. Thanks and have a great day.